Chapter 14. It works as hand sanitizer, too. In the summer of 2019, Lucas Rensko and his wife sold their 12-year-old Mitsubishi Outlander, along with most of their belongings, packed up and left the breezy tropical hills of Honolulu, Hawaii, for the oppressive heat and wide river plains of San Antonio, Texas. His wife, a doctor, took a job at a nearby hospital while he hunted for odd jobs on TaskRabbit, the handyman for hire app. He delivered groceries and assembled furniture to help pay the bills until something more permanent came along. Then the pandemic hit. And after weeks of pressure, Texas Governor Greg Abbott begrudgingly locked down the state. Well, sort of. As the lockdowns eased and the public established new levels of comfort and acceptable boundaries, the TaskRabbit gigs began to pop back up, and 36-year-old Rensko made his own risk calculations and decided to pick up a task from a stranger that he thought entailed a simple delivery. The task took him to a tattered row of appliance and car repair shops in northwest San Antonio, to a leaky-roofed warehouse that was being rented month to month. It abuts a Mediterranean food distributor's chaotically organized stockroom, where wafting scents of exotic produce coalesce with that of nearby hot garbage and the vermin that feast upon it. Rensko, a not-small man, approached, and a very large man met him and introduced himself as Jaime Rivera. The man politely informed Rensko that this was a modest bait-and-switch of sorts, but that he had good work lined up for him. He was like, "Okay, well listen, this isn't really a delivery," Rensko would later tell me. "What we're doing is basically repackaging masks, and we're going to sell them to hospitals." He's asking, "Well, how much time can you commit?" Rensko said. "We've got a whole lot of work for you." He's basically in this large warehouse with large tables set up. He's got 5 or 6 people in there doing this, and he kind of takes us on this tour of his facility, which is essentially a shelled-out warehouse. "They're from China," Rensko said, referring to thousands of masks that taskers were repackaging. And he was saying they were designated for personal or residential use, not for medical, and so what he was doing was basically putting them into other packaging where the city of Antonio and the state of Texas are able to look at them and buy them for medical purposes, he continued. "He's giving me this background of why it's legitimate," Rensko remembers. Rivera, he said, told him that state and local governments won't even look at them if they're not in this packaging. I said, "Listen, man, I'm going to dip. I don't feel good about what you're doing. It doesn't seem moral to me." Rensko told his wife, who told a friend, who later told me. When we connected by phone the first week of June, Rensko agreed to take me to the warehouse, and I told my editor I needed to head down to the Lone Star State, where, under the leadership of a waffling governor and his cryptic directives, cases of COVID-19 were surging out of control. It was fascinating to see both California and Texas, economic and cultural foes through and through, at this point in the pandemic, when COVID cases had already surged and scared the hell out of the coasts, and cases were beginning to rise in the inner kingdom, where leaders had much more time to prepare and to equivocate. In California, a blue state, residents were militant about masks, even in open-air situations. In Texas, a red state, people were galvanized against the oppression of a basic, if inconvenient, public health measure. Part of me wished I could gather up a few representatives from each state and place them in the octagon for a winner-take-all battle royal to settle our differences once and for all. In one corner, self-righteous indignation at the enemy's rejection of reason and the communal good, and in the other, formidable courage built upon a sort of cultural entitlement to individual freedom, whatever the cost. The Texans would destroy the Californians, bless their hearts. But we'd all lose. It was 96 degrees, though it felt hotter on that day in mid-June. I met Rensko at a Starbucks around the corner from this shelled-out warehouse where people hired on a smartphone app conspired to deceive Texas hospitals. We made introductions in the empty patio area, where chairs were stacked and locked, and with sweat on our brows, discussed his encounter with the man who appeared to be leading this repackaging operation. "He called me the next day and apologized," Rinsko said behind black Oakley shades. "So he knew something was up." In California, a dearth of customers afforded me a free rental upgrade to a black convertible Ford Mustang, which was wonderful. In Texas, the folks at the counter at the San Antonio airport said all I could get was an older model Dodge Caravan, which was the opposite of wonderful. We masked up, piled into the suburban monstrosity, and whipped around the corner to a 5,000-square-foot warehouse in disrepair. The large metal garage door was closed as I passed by, hoping to get a sense of what to expect before parking in front. There were two men chatting just outside the warehouse, one peering out of a blue taxi and the other gesturing wildly at him, giving the impression they were locked in a spirited but friendly debate. The latter held a small bottle of amber liquid sloshing about, which I mistook for rum or whiskey. We introduced ourselves, and before I could balk, I was locked in the first handshake I'd participated in since early March. It was a reflex, I suppose, from the before time. I made a mental note to not touch my face and to sanitize once I returned to the van. I told them I was following up on a potential story about a mask repackaging operation. Instantly, the two men indicated they knew what I was talking about. The man with the sloshing bottle said, "The FBI is looking for them. He was going to sell these masks to a guy I know," the man, who introduced himself first as Ricardo, only to amend it later, said. "They just disappeared. They've been gone 2 weeks now." Before the mysterious neighbors disappeared, the man said he watched U-Haul trucks pop in and out with loads of masks. Between sorting, shuffling, and transporting boxes of imported Mediterranean goods, he tried to peek in a couple of times, but was shooed away by the big guy and another man, a well-to-do white guy from California. "The guy's name is Brennan," the man said of the white guy, sweat soaking through a worn blue Burberry shirt. "He's an American, but he was in China. He had about 1 million masks," he added. The man said he'd set Brennan up with a private buyer he knew, a guy named Sam, who was his cousin. He wouldn't provide a last name. I handed him a business card and asked that he pass it along to this mystery Sam. But the deal fell through, the man said, when Sam realized the masks weren't on the FDA's ever-changing list of masks that were roughly as good as the American-made N95. The guy recited recent amendments to the list for masks allowed under emergency use authorization in hospital settings, which told me he knew more about the business than he divulged. Soon after, he said, Brennan disappeared. "He felt that someone was looking for him," he said. It was the first truly hot day in Texas, the day the weather breaks, signaling an approaching inferno. In the dead of summer, the Texas sun doesn't just beat on you. It demoralizes you. It insults your mother and makes you consider your life choices. Lamenting as much, the man pressed on the cap of the bottle I'd mistaken for liquor and spritzed the neckline of his Burberry shirt. The cologne he'd been holding. Obsession for men. "It's because I'm sweaty," he said, nudging at me, next pointing to his hands. "Look, it works as hand sanitizer, too." Having failed to catch the action in real life, I did what any good millennial would do. I turned to social media. A quick perusal of Jaime Rivera's Facebook page told me he spoiled and doted on his 6 children, often dancing in the yard and driveway with them. He shared memes critical of Donald Trump and privileged white people. He had a good sense of humor. He posted a photo of himself from inside a supermarket, wearing an unsoiled diaper as a mask, his eyes wide open, as if he were a Pampers-themed luchador. His favorite shirt appeared to be a classic blue Superman tee, which I also own and wear too often. He was just a guy trying to get through this morass without going bust or getting killed. It was clear that he worked hard, routinely updating his virtual friends with his exploits and the fruits of his labor, a few $100 for assembling furniture here, a few more for some landscaping there. He was a generalist handyman, and judging by the comments, his friends adored him for it. This habit of sharing his latest odd jobs would reveal his culpability, however. As I scrolled through his happy feed, a few posts stood out. They began in late April 2020, when he posted a series of photos that showed dozens of beaten-up boxes stacked in his San Antonio garage, in between his wife's craft tables. Bursting through the seams were more than 150,000 KN95s, the Chinese masks that often didn't pass muster with the FDA or NIOSH, and without further testing shouldn't be used in healthcare settings, where tiny particles with the virus can seep through. While the ear loop masks might offer some protection, the FDA warned healthcare workers against using them. The 6-foot stack of boxes came from a Chinese manufacturer that had been called out by the FDA as producing ineffective KN95s. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention found in test results it posted online that those which Rivera was peddling filtered as few as 39% of particles, a far cry from the 95% of a bona fide N95 mask. These particular masks were so ineffective that Canada had issued a recall. But before the CDC warned of their ineffectiveness, the FDA had hastily approved them and other masks, often relying on paperwork provided by the manufacturers themselves, for healthcare use at the beginning of the pandemic, as the Trump administration tried to atone for its original sin of ignoring the coming onslaught. I wondered if those masks had been imported before the FDA's about-face. The timestamps on Rivera's posts suggested as much. And once they were in, who would buy them? And what was someone who had invested in them, hoping to make quick-turn profit, to do with their potentially worthless bounty? Also intriguing, Rivera had posted a $2,000 payment he had received from a sender noted as BM through Venmo, the person-to-person payment app I knew from the days when I could hang out with friends and split a bar or restaurant tab. The payment memo read, 4/17, KN95, 37.5 drop-off, and 50K handoff. A day's work, Rivera announced to his friends. He had used a U-Haul rental truck to deliver nearly 100,000 masks to two buyers that day, according to a separate post. Looks like code for a drug deal, one of his friends commented beneath the post. From China? Another friend asked, to which Rivera responded, yep, on its way to medical facilities all over Texas. Soon I might have a trip to Los Angeles as well. Rivera left a series of these posts. Off to Dallas to pick up 200,000 masks. 3 hours to go pick up a load of 47,000 masks, another post read. Tomorrow, 4 a.m. start for delivery to Houston, Texas for 3 facilities. Upon return, looking at picking up another shipment from the airport for another load. Looking at, hopefully, a 15 to 17 hour day at 50 per hour. God bless you, FEMA. LOL. My God, I thought. He's been delivering these masks all over Texas. But for whom? It was clear someone else was paying him to do it. One of his public posts included a text message exchange with BM, and the iPhone text app showed his first name was Brennan, the same name the mystery man with the cologne had mentioned. When I used Venmo, I typically added a cheeky comment, a mildly inappropriate but not untrue inside joke, such as the time I paid a friend who helped me retile a bathroom and appended the note, that thing you did with your hands. Each time I marked my exchanges as private, so only those involved could see the exchange. I pulled out my iPhone, tapped the app, and searched for Rivera using the moniker he'd published online for the world to see. God bless him, Rivera and BM left their comments public. Venmo showed that Rivera's payments from Brennan Mulligan, a.k.a. BM, included one for 131 boxes to TDEM, an acronym for the Texas Division of Emergency Management, the state's version of FEMA. I knew, from watching my former state's muddling response to the pandemic, that this agency had been charged with receiving and routing supplies and life-saving gear directly to hospitals coping with COVID-19 cases. I hopped to Mulligan's public Venmo profile and could see he had been paying Rivera and a dozen other people for weeks. He also detailed what he had paid them for. 5/18, packaging. He noted in payments to 12 different people in late May. He was paying them about $20 an hour. 6 p.m. to 11 p.m. repackaging on 5th. 12 to 6 p.m., 5/5, repackaging. I had knocked on numerous doors across sprawling San Antonio and hadn't been able to find Rivera. So I called him, and to my surprise, over a series of calls, he outlined the business in which he found himself. It didn't take much persuasion for Rivera to walk me through it. In mid-April, he responded to a delivery gig sent to him through TaskRabbit. Need to pick up a truckload of boxes at Southwest Cargo near San Antonio Airport, SAT, and drop off at Texas Department of Emergency Management, TDEM, warehouse, according to a screenshot Rivera later shared with me. It would take an estimated 2 to 3 hours and required a truck, which Rivera rented from U-Haul. This was easy money, Rivera explained, and it came just in time. He made most of his income through jobs on the TaskRabbit app, and after the lockdowns, most opportunities for cash dried up because people were no longer inviting strangers into their homes to build IKEA furniture. He was desperate, and his obligations to his family were immense. Once he got to the TDEM warehouse in San Antonio, he dropped off the boxes, and the state's emergency workers would process the masks and distribute them to hospitals across the state. After his first delivery, Rivera and Mulligan cut out the digital middleman and began working together through text messages and exchanging payment using Venmo. So, I went from picking up packages in San Antonio to Houston to Dallas to Austin, bringing them back over for processing, and that's pretty much it, he told me. Receipts that Rivera kept show Mulligan was importing Chinese masks to Los Angeles and then placing them on a Southwest Airlines cargo jet destined for various Texas airports so they could be delivered to his far-flung buyers, primarily the state of Texas. To my knowledge, this was the first close-up view of how subpar and ineffective masks were seeping into the pipeline and ending up on healthcare workers' faces. Rivera was just a courier at first. He delivered 94 boxes and 2,444 pounds of masks on April 29th, according to shipping records, and another 52 boxes and 1,300 pounds on May 4th. The masks were different brands, but none were approved for medical use by the FDA, according to the receipts Rivera shared. But in May, the job changed. The FDA was cracking down on bad masks as they made their way into hospital settings, vexing and endangering frontline workers who trusted their lives to devices that came through such dubious back channels. Further complicating the new business partner's efforts was the refusal by TDEM and other buyers, growing wise to the sea of subpar masks, to accept anything that had been labeled as not for medical use. Dozens of mask brands that the FDA had hastily approved under emergency use authorization were suddenly unacceptable. Mulligan had sent a massive shipment of masks that fell into this limbo, and that's when the two came up with a plan to pull the masks, 10 at a time, out of their packaging and place them into new packaging so they could be cleared for sale by TDEM and forwarded to hospitals. Rivera was put in charge of finding local help to speed up this repackaging scheme, and he turned to the app that was functionally his employer. He'd gone from courier to a manager of sorts, supervising workers' hours and recruiting people like Rensko, who'd later tip me off. All we're doing is we're just omitting, Rivera explained, unaware of why this was bad. We're taking off anything that says non-medical. This wasn't a big deal, he said, because those labels were a perfunctory disclaimer that Chinese officials had onerously required for masks that were being exported. If the masks arrived in their original packaging with the disclaimer, state inspectors would notice the warning and reject the masks without further inquiry. He was just clearing up red tape in pursuit of getting masks to people who needed them, for a little bit of money. He was one of the good guys. It's stupid, Rivera said. These KN95s, they're much easier to use for just day-to-day activities. While that is true, the ear loop masks are far less cumbersome than the tightly fitted 3M N95s with elastic headbands. He wasn't selling them for day-to-day use. These weren't going to grocery stores. They were going to hospitals. I explained my concern. Before it gets to the hospital level, he attempted to explain, it has to get past the red tape. FEMA was trying to capture ineffective and counterfeit masks before they reached domestic supply chains and ultimately hospitals. This scheme circumvented that effort by sending smaller, less noticeable shipments zigzagging across the country to be picked up by a guy in a U-Haul in Texas. These masks are being taken and are being denied for arbitrary reasons, he said. Those are lives that are being impacted. Rivera claimed the repackaging enterprise had slowed down in mid-May anyway because the warehouse was too small and there were leaks everywhere. I didn't even bother to mention the safety concerns. Having a few dozen people in tight and unsanitary quarters, a leaking roof, and open air as they removed and replaced packaging of products that hospitals expect to be hermetically sealed, sterile, and otherwise unadulterated. We talked at length, as long as I could keep him on the phone, but in that time, Rivera could not provide an explanation as to why he needed to repackage the masks if it weren't for the sole purpose of removing an important medical disclaimer. There was nothing stopping the men from selling these as non-medical masks to the general public. At this point, I had collected a few dozen non-medical KN95s at various retailers, for instance. The key difference, I suspected, was that medical facility buyers paid a great deal more for legitimate KN95s. Rivera at first said he'd have no qualms about meeting me in person to go over all this, but each time I tried to pin down a time to meet, he would back out. Growing more worried as I asked questions, Rivera finally offered that the real reason the repackaging operation had halted was that he and Mulligan had been approached by an investigator with the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Homeland Security Investigations, or HSI, which investigates counterfeits, among other potential crimes. That visit, he conceded, had given him pause. That's when I asked, "Are you worried you were complicit in a crime?" "The more we talk about it, yes," he said. Before he hung up, and later rebuffed my text messages, he added, "I'm not the brains of the operation, and I'm definitely not the wallet for it." The wallet was Brennan Mulligan, a San Francisco businessman with connections in China. He had founded a company whose proprietary software allowed brands like Reebok and Nike to customize products using computer simulations, and he later sold that enterprise. So he knew a little about tech and a little about Chinese imports and the textile industry, which had largely shifted to mask production in those dark and austere months. Mulligan was, at this point, CEO of SKU Incorporated, a newer venture. This firm's manufacture-on-demand business provides 3D design software for companies to create unique shirts and hoodies, which are manufactured in and then shipped from China. Using the Internet Archive, I could see that the company had been advertising various PPE, including the KN95s, on a since-deleted webpage. As others were, the company was charging well beyond the usual list price. It might have seemed odd that a tech-slash-clothing entrepreneur would wade into the get-rich-quick absurdity of mask trading. but it did fit with what I'd seen in California and what I'd heard from the dozens of mask traders I'd encountered. Behind every mask deal, there is a mysterious investor. By now, I knew Rivera had likely told Mulligan what I was up to, so I saw no harm in emailing Mulligan to ask him why he was using technology and low-wage workers to deceive Texas emergency workers. I would be willing to share my opinion, re your questions, off the record, but I don't feel comfortable being quoted publicly, Mulligan wrote back. I informed him that if he chose to talk with me, it would be on the record because his business was the subject of the story. He didn't respond, so I kept reporting out the story. I had routinely analyzed Texas purchasing data, a vast database of payments, receipts, and so forth, so I was surprised when I found no trace of any payments to Skew or Rivera or Mulligan. I called the Texas Emergency Agency, and a spokesman said the agency had no record of dealing with the company either. I followed up and emailed a photo of the masks that were being repackaged, which Rivera shared with me, and asked if they looked familiar to TDEM staff who were vetting and receiving loads of masks from various brokers. The agency recognized them, and through a public records request, the agency provided a photo they had taken of shipments they had received but rejected, comparing Rivera's photo and TDEM's. The packages were identical, but for the important words that were missing from the final packaging. Medical use prohibited. The brand of masks had never been cleared by the FDA. The reason the Texas Emergency Agency didn't initially know anything about Skew, Mulligan, or Rivera is that the two were routing their product through yet another third-party vendor, which had landed a deal in mid-April to hunt down KN95s for $6 apiece. A flagrant ripoff. Skew, it turns out, was a subcontractor selling to a master contractor. This kept Skew and its emissaries out of public view, save for some unforced errors on Venmo and Facebook. It was another broker chain, which, by design, hiked up prices and spread profit among people who, for the most part, would never face any public scrutiny. Texas canceled its deal with that master contractor and its subcontractor, Skew, in late May because the products we were receiving were fraudulent, a spokesman said. The master contractor would blame Rivera and Mulligan for getting the deal killed, alleging they went above and beyond to work around roadblocks and get subpar masks to hospitals. In total, Texas paid more than $14.8 million for masks through that master contract and its invisible broker chain, records show. My reporting would find that Texas had one of the more rigorous processes for weeding out bad masks, but it also found that whatever Texas rejected would just be sold to another state or hospital that lacked such a process. Nearing the end of my trip, I decided to extend my stay and head about 180 miles east to Houston to see a guy about why he was screwing over his country. FEMA had agreed to pay him $10.5 million to supply COVID-19 testing tubes, but a public health official had slipped to me that the test tubes were actually unusual mini soda bottles that were worthless to labs. I didn't want to leave San Antonio, however, before following up with the outlandish guy outside the shuttered warehouse, the guy with the cologne. I popped into his storeroom, where he offered a refreshing, fermented, non-alcoholic fruit beverage, but no more information. His businessman cousin, Sam, the man who almost bought masks from Mulligan, was a busy guy and wasn't going to speak with me. But more than once, he gestured behind him as if Sam's place of business was nearby. I went out to my stupid Dodge Caravan, popped open Google Maps, typed in Sam, and soon came upon Sammy's Embroidery Club, just 8 miles away. It was worth checking out, I thought. He was in textiles, so that's not a completely unreasonable leap. When I entered Sammy's Embroidery, it was alive with the tinny thrum of industrial sewing machines that mended together ornate biker gang apparel, local sports team jerseys, and what you might call designer COVID-19 masks. I waited for about an hour as Sam helped customers, and then we sat on a couch in the middle of the noise to talk about Brennan Mulligan, whom he did indeed know. "The guy, you could tell from the first minute he was hiding something," said Bassam Sam Hassan. Hassan had met with Mulligan shortly after TDEM declined to purchase SKU's masks. Thanks to his connections and experience importing from Chinese textile factories, Hassan said, he had become a modest supplier of PPE to the city of San Antonio and the local jail. He also had a cousin in Illinois who had a potential contract with a hospital system there, so he was interested in getting good KN95s. He was connected with Mulligan, he said, by his cousin Yasar, the guy with the cologne, who worked next door to the pop-up mask warehouse. "If they are 100% approved," I said, "why not?" he said. According to text messages Hassan showed me, Mulligan was offering a couple of different brands of mask. They were on the CDC emergency use authorization list before, one text from Mulligan's number reads. They've since been removed, so we can't say whether they will meet the KN95 standard. He wanted to do the deal immediately, Hassan said. This was like $1 million, and I said, you can't do that. Instead, on Memorial Day, Hassan met Mulligan and Rivera, his right-hand man from TaskRabbit, at an IHOP off Loop 410, a couple of blocks from the warehouse. When he told me he was repackaging them, I was out, Hassan told me. I'm not a little kid. I've been in business for 27 years. Come on, man, this guy, I can tell you he's not doing it right. Near the end of our 40-minute chat, Hassan took out his phone and said he could prove he had nothing to do with Mulligan. He called and put Mulligan on speakerphone, which I did not ask him to do. I took notes as the two talked. "Did you solve the masks you had, or what's the deal?" Hassan asked Mulligan. "What happened?" "No, I've just been contacting people," Mulligan responded. "But you know there's just a lot of masks out there now." "Well, I sent the merchandise to the hospital," Hassan said. "But they said they didn't pass, you know." Hassan continued. "So legally, like, you can't really sell them to them if they're not matching the criteria they need, you know?" This was an act of CYA. Cover your ass. Hassan told Mulligan he'd be interested in trying again to sell to an unnamed Illinois hospital, but he'd need masks that were NIOSH approved. Mulligan said he was aware of a couple of warehouses in Los Angeles that did have masks that would pass U.S. standards, but he probably couldn't scrape $1 million together on short notice. Hassan asked what the deal was with the repackaged masks. Mulligan told him it was just a formality. "So, you know, the China customs, they passed this dumb law," Mulligan said. He was referring to rules the Chinese government imposed on exporters after masks sent to other countries like the Netherlands resulted in complaints that dangerous, subpar masks were being sold as effective in medical situations. The rules slowed down exports, bugged exporters, and exacerbated a global shortage of PPE. But they also may have saved lives by slowing the flow of untrustworthy masks. They said, "Oh, you have to have non-medical on the packaging," Mulligan said. And so the factory, this is like a law in China, so the factory provided us with the non-medical use packaging and their original packaging. Mulligan said he was just undoing China's vetting process and replacing the packaging so it could be sold to hospitals. He did not address the fact that his masks had not been tested or cleared by the FDA. As a rule, if China, whose consumer and worker protections are notoriously lax, tells you something shouldn't be used in a hospital setting, it's wise to steer clear. "It's a Chinese law," Mulligan said. "So in a very technical sense, we're breaking a Chinese law in America." After this awkward call, I followed up with Mulligan myself. He didn't return my phone calls, but sent an email. In the end, Mulligan said, all the effort and expense of repackaging the masks was a waste. He shared photos of scores of boxes outside a self-storage locker, Millions of masks he said he couldn't unload. He made his Venmo transactions private. We did not sell any repackaged KN95s to TDEM or any other customers in the U.S., he wrote. If that's true, the only people who made money on the repackaging shenanigans? The Taskers. A spokesperson with Homeland Security Investigations responded to my inquiry about its look into SKU and Rivera's operation. The agency responded in an almost bemused tone, something of a federal law enforcement version of a shrug. At this time, HSI, along with its law enforcement partners, is assessing these allegations in an effort to determine if any violations exist and/or if mishandling occurred, the statement said. We like to say that when we sink our teeth into a story, we don't let go until it's dead. I felt like I was gnawing on the tendons at this point, and barring illegal travel to China to chase down likely untraceable threads, I decided to move on. I had a 4-hour drive of wide, flat Texas scenery ahead of me, and a Texas mix that included ZZ Top, Stevie Ray Vaughan, and Leon Bridges. Plenty of time and headspace to reflect on the conditions that made this state such a fascinating and outrageous case study.